Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hello, I'm Wendy. We're going to go back and revisit one of the top shows. It's a ghost story. Even better, this ghost writes on Polaroids. Joe Augustin's book is called Ghost Rider, The Polaroid Ghost, and Other True Tales of the Paranormal. He opens with his own paranormal history, growing up in a haunted house, so he's got his own backstory. John Huckert lives in the Wright House, and he was there when the script developed on the first image. Lots of stories about what it was like to see the initial message, and then observe as other groups came through and they showed up to investigate the case. They weren't able to debunk it. The story continues in a different form because that Polaroid film is no longer available. My favorite Polaroid is the one that says, anything is possible. Here's John Huckert.
When he was about maybe a year old, kids babble, but when they first speak, was when he was standing in the living room and he pointed into the hallway, where the bathroom doors, where it opens, where Peter James says there's a vortex. He pointed in there and he said, ghost. His very first word was ghost.
This Polaroid project is absolutely slam dunk. Thank you for talking about it. Introduce yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And thank you for inviting me. Yeah, my name is John Huckert, and I live in a house that is extraordinary, I guess is one way to put it. Gosh, I'm terrible at introducing myself.
Okay, you're a filmmaker.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm an independent guerrilla filmmaker, and I have been for longer than I care to say. And I've made a lot of independent films. Some people might have seen some of them. Some have been on TV, and some are on Blu-ray. And I also write music for movies and theme songs and things like that, scores. So I've been doing it for my whole life, and I absolutely love it.
The people who have come and gone through this house are creative people, and I do think that amps up the energy.
I do, too. I do know back in the 60s, I think it was the son of Dana Andrews used to own the house. I know in the 60s, apparently one of the Beach Boys would come by here and smoke dope. So I have a theory. This is completely me theorizing and has nothing to do with probably reality. But I like to think he got the inspiration for Pet Sounds at this house. Or maybe they even wrote some songs here. I don't know. I also know the Beatles used to come up and down the street here. They went to a place close by here that they hung out in all the time. And the reason they come here is because nobody knows that this place is here. Mm-hmm. So, I like to think that a lot of creative things happened in and around here. But, of course, I have no proof that anything was written here by the Beach Boys. I harbor that in the back of my mind as a possibility.
It adds to the ambiance. Yes, yes.
It does. It does.
The cool thing is there was some poltergeist activity in the house. And so that was kind of a known quantity. But when you showed up, that's when everything started to take off.
Well, that's when it became concrete. Like, it was always here, but that's when the visual evidence started showing up. That's when it was pretty amazing. Before, there's a lot of things happening here, even long before I got here. But when the Polaroid started happening, that's when it suddenly became ultra real, I guess. It was became more substantial, I guess, and more and shareable in a different way. Because you can tell people, yeah, I heard something, I saw something, I felt something. But if you can show them something, that has a whole different, resonance to it.
Sightings was the TV television enterprise that really gave it legs.
There were a number of shows that came in. One of the reasons we originally, John and I didn't tell anybody for 3 or 4 months. It was it started in March of 92, and I believe, as I remember, it was June of 92 when we finally shared it with some friends. And one of the reasons we did was because friends also buy Polaroid film. When Sightings came in, it was a field day. They brought a giant box. I don't know how many packages of film in there, but there must have been 100. And they basically kept it They had like people supervising it. Like you could not touch the film until they were filming. You touch the film to put in the camera, or one of them was doing it. It was so funny because they had it very, very controlled, which is good. That's what, you know, what you want. You want to have a controlled thing. But the thing that we, early on, we realized that we were going to be asking other people to buy film. We thought what we need to do is set up a rule at the house. And the rule is if you, even if you bring over your own camera and your own film, if you get a Polaroid with either the ectoplasmic, what do you call it, ectoplasmic energy, or if you get writing, if you get anything that that's not just a regular Polaroid, that it belongs to the house. The house allowed you to take it, but now the house owns it. So we set that up early on, like right as soon as we started asking people to, you know, well, bring your camera, you know, bring a roll of film.
Yes,
and
yeah.
You can come over and take pictures. And it enabled us to hang on to most of them. There are still some that got out, and there some have been stolen. But for the most part, we have 98% of them, I think.
I like the one, the demon one. Okay, the guy who has the nerve to show up on Halloween dressed as the Grim Reaper. And and then the house plays its own joke back on him. And it was like, okay, bud, you got it? Here.
I remember that. That was the last Halloween party we had. Because we used to, I mean, it used to be the cool place to come to for a Halloween party. But then when you start having 200 people showing up for a party that you invited 15 or 20.
Oh.
And you don't know who these people are. Yeah. And then little things start disappearing around the house, little tchotchkes and stuff like that. You go, okay, something's going on. But I remember that party, and I remember that photograph, because there was actually a series of them. That guy was in, I think, there was two, because people had cameras all around the room. So, you know, a couple of them were snapped at like the same time. And I remember that one is like a close-up. I think that's in the book. When he saw that picture, he just, like, freaked out and just left. No one knows who he is.
Really?
He, like, showed up. Yeah, we don't know who, we never didn't know who he was. Like, when he was here, I remember thinking, well, because he's got all that paint on his face.
Yes,
so
yeah.
I didn't know who he was, but I thought after he got the photograph, he started asking questions or something, and then he looked terrified.
Now he's just like, I got my answer. Thank you so much. See ya.
Yeah, that's all I need. That's all I need. I'm out of here.
I thought the house had a good sense of humor and called his bluff.
Yeah, I think so, too. There's a lot of humor in some of the photographs. Most of them we haven't. In fact, Joe's book is the first time we've allowed a lot of those pictures out. Like, most of them no one's ever seen before. In fact, there's a lot of them I haven't even seen before.
I love them. I love, and not only that, when you go through here, the psychic that was there, Peter James, he's in several of these pictures, and obviously the house liked him.
Oh, yeah.
There was a good rapport.
That was the beauty of sightings, because what they would do is they would just take him to a location. He didn't even know where he's going, and they would just take him to a location and plop him down and let him experience whatever he's going to experience. And I still remember in the sightings episode, I was watching them filming him walk up the path, and you see him, and that's the first time I saw him walking up the path. And I remember he came in and said, you know, I've never seen anything like this, and I, you know, I'm not saying I don't believe it, but I am very skeptical. And then as he went on, it was really fascinating to watch him transform. At one point, he was talking, his legs were shaking, and he's talking about this body that's buried under the house, and showed us exactly where it is, and said he staked his entire reputation as a psychic on the fact that there's a body buried under our house. He became a good friend, and that's the best thing about sightings, is we got introduced to Peter James, and we stayed friends with him up until he died. In fact, the last time he was here, right before he died, there were pictures in the book of him. That was quite a session. Quite a number of pictures were taken. We shared, I can't remember how many are in the book. There's a few. It was interesting because it was saying things to him specifically about rethinking his belief and stuff like that. And something about it. I can't remember, like expanding the realm or something. But we realized, looking back on it, that it was basically prepping him for what was coming next for him. That's what we thought.
Yeah, I agree. You know? I agree. Well, earlier in the, you talk about this in the book. Joe talks about it and saying that the first sequence that he got had anything is possible. And then at the end, yeah, all things are possible. So it was the next transition of, okay, you've gone from anything to, you know, the limits are off.
Right. Yeah. We were talking about the 3D picture earlier, but if you look at the cover of the book and the 3D picture, Joe's actually on the cover of the book, mm-hmm, and in the picture, but you don't know to look for him. But if you look, like Peter James standing there and there's all that beauty around him, right behind him is a doorway and it's in a couple of windows. And if you look through the window, there's a person standing there. That's Joe. The guy,
wow,
who wrote the book.
Okay. Well, that's subtle.
Isn't that cool? Yeah. It's so subtle that you don't even notice there's anybody there.
No, it's a completely, yeah. Okay, yeah. Yeah. Okay. So hidden in plain view, kind of.
And exactly. But that's the author of the book.
He could be a ghost.
So. He could, yeah.
Okay. So the deal, though, is that for you, when you showed up, and I've heard you on these other shows talk about that feeling when you saw something, you saw the closet door open and you're writing in this beautiful space.
Right. It was the bathroom door, but yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. It's a door. It's like a wood door, the old kind of door in a cabin that's really, you know, just basically a door and not much show to it.
Yeah. It's like three or four boards that are like put together with a cross boards. I mean, it's a really old door.
And it's heavy.
They don't make doors like that.
It's heavy.
Yeah, it was heavy. Yeah.
So when this door opens, you're like, you're trying to make it go away in your mind, just saying, well, I didn't see that really. And then it happens again.
Well, the interesting thing is that for the door to open, like when you would go to open it, you'd have to kind of lift it up because it scrapes on the floor. In fact, the marks are still on the floor from the scraping of this door over all these years. Mm-hmm. So for it to open by itself was kind of extraordinary. You know what I mean? Something's making it open.
Absolutely.
Past where you could open it unless you lift it up. When it first started, I mean, I just sent something and I took a picture and nothing and I felt silly. And then when the door opened, like I'm watching it open, like hearing it and looking up and seeing it, I'm like, oh my God. So I thought, well, maybe now I'm supposed to take the picture. But I got really super nervous because it was so crazy that I actually snapped a picture of the top of the TV set. Mm-hmm. Like I was shaking and I snapped a picture and I'm like, oh God. And so I just calmed down. I took a picture and that's the first one was that really scary, funny, Caspery kind of ghost.
Yes. And you know, I mean, like, wow, first shot. That's great. That's an entrance.
Well, it was a great entrance. You're absolutely right. What a great entrance. It's like, it's obviously trying to get our attention. But is it trying to scare us or laugh at us?
Yes.
You know what I mean? Because
yes,
it's so obviously trying to be scary, but somehow it's like funny at the same time.
It's like, give me a break. I'm trying to be spooky, okay? I'm trying. This is it. I'll work on it.
Exactly.
Go back in the bathroom and practice.
The next couple were just sort of like light forms or whatever.
Yeah.
And then when Mikowski got home, I said, like, we had talked about it, and I always told him I was going to figure out a way to, you know, prove to him that, because when something happens in this house, he has blinders on. He tries to pretend like it doesn't exist. And he's still that way, even though he has so much stuff happen to him all the time, and he's witnessed so many things, but it still somehow makes him kind of nervous.
Yeah.
Even after all these years. So anyway, when the Polaroid started, I showed it to him. He goes, wow, how'd you do this? And I said, well, this is what happened. The door opened. I snapped a picture. And he goes, well, go over there. Let me take a picture of you. At that point, I'd closed the bathroom door. And he got some, like, lights and, you know, the movement or whatever.
Right.
And then while we're standing there watching it develop, the bathroom door opens again while we're both there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, shit. So I took a picture, and it has this, like, sort of like a mummified, it almost looks religious to me. It's like this beautiful hovering shape of a body, sort of. It's like one of my favorite pictures ever. I just think it's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And And then at that point, we're like, okay, something's going on. As I've said before, I thought it might be my dad because he was a practical joker. So I thought he might have toyed with the camera or something. But then we soon realized that that was impossible. It took a while before we got more film. It was a couple of weeks. And then we kept getting them. And then after about, as I said, I think it was 3 months. It was whatever, March to June, how many months that is. That's when we decided to share it. But at this point, all it was the light forms and shapes, and Peter James would call it, I think, a burst of spectral energy. Or, you know, he would say, give us descriptive ways of describing what was on the film. And then we invited over three or four friends, and we were showing it to them. And then I believe it was Rick said, is he here now? And then I don't remember if it was Rick or Ross. One of them grabbed the camera and took a picture. I know it wasn't me because I'm in the picture, and Mikowski's in the picture, and our neighbor across the street, she's in the picture. So whoever else was there snapped the picture. Then at some point we realized it wasn't just the light forms. It was actually a word. And then we had to, like, you know, reverse engineer and go, okay, what does this say? And then what did we ask? So we realized it said the word yes. And that we had, Rick had asked, are you here now? And of course, that just opened the floodgates.
For all of you to have that experience together and realize you've made contact.
Yeah, it's like, it's one thing, because I've always thought of ghosts as imprints on the landscape, like sort of like a tape recorder playing it over and over again. So when you see something moving across, it's like, It's always going to do that same movement, and you're always going to see it in certain places because that's where it imprinted on the land.
A residual haunt.
Yeah, a residual thing, But this suddenly changed the game because this was apparently communication.
Interactive.
To answer the specific
question. Yes, this is interactive.
Yeah, and then the questions just spilled out like crazy.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it. So your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Wendy's Coffee House, my guest, John Huckert, the experiencer, one of them who lives in the house and continues to see interesting stuff. But the Polaroids are the story.
Early on, we would write down the date, the time, the question. Like, as soon as it came out of the camera, we'd write that down. But you have to realize that a lot of times you wouldn't get a response. You get nothing. So after a couple of months of that, you start going, oh, my God, there's so much writing involved. And you know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, so that's called science. That's called science.
Yeah, it is. Unfortunately, we lost our scientific edge and we're just having fun with asking questions like, are you a good ghost or a bad ghost?
Yeah, right. And it, I like the answer to that, too. It said, friend.
Yes, I thought that was quite cool.
Yes, it's like, okay.
And of course, we asked, you know, lottery numbers and who was going to win the horse race and just anything you can think of. And where do you go when you're not here? And he said, flux. And, you know, so you get, after like seriously thinking of every possible question, you start running out of questions because he will answer certain ones and he won't answer others. But we'd have people come over and say, like my friend Rick came over and asked, he had two different projects he's thinking on working on, and he wanted to know which one he should pursue. Mm-hmm. And Wright wouldn't tell him. He would
not
tell him.
Yes, this is your homework,
dude. He won't
tell
you what to do.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, I don't know if this is even in the book, but I remember one time Rick was having, he had some really terrifying nightmare, which I can't remember the details of it. I just remember it was something really startling and frightening for him. And he asked Wright about it, and Wright said some to the effect of, that was not me, or something. And then that actually scared Rick more, because it's like, okay, so it was you. Oh, my God, who was it? You know what I mean?
Yes, the unknown. The unknown.
Yeah, the unknown.
You talked about where the ghost goes in between. There was another interview you did, and this was, I thought it was really a fun one, Death Valley Girls podcast, and this had to do with questions that Bill Murphy was answering, and he's a researcher, paranormal researcher, and he sat in with you on this interview, and that flux thing came up, and then what I thought was so interesting, she gets, the interviewer is interrupted because she got from her sister a text that talked about corn dogs, and then Bill says, we just ordered corn dogs. And there's that flux element that the two of you have this very convenient, synchronistic coincidence of corn dogs. You know how many people at the same time would be ordering corn dogs? Okay, yeah. Really? Come on.
Yeah.
And so that's the flux to me of how a spirit can engage. And I'm bringing this in out of the blue because of my own experience and my background. They can engage in ways that we still don't identify and sometimes overlook because it's so innocuous. So there, the fact that he wasn't, he says, in the dream, that there's another spirit engaging because there are multiple spirits in your space. And conveniently, you know, only one is identified. The others get to be in the background, just like the picture on the front where he's or Joe's in the background. You don't know it. That's what this whole thing is so incredibly, I think, informational about how these things can happen and how when different people come to the equation, like there's another person who comes to the house to live. Is it Noel?
Noel, yes.
When he comes in, the house then gets even more active.
Yes. Yeah. Basically, it is. Soon after we shot the sightings episode, the communication ceased. We would occasionally get some the ectoplasmic stuff, but we weren't getting any writing at all. And then Noel became our friend, and he came over here. And at one point, he took what I consider to be probably one of the first selfies with the Polaroid. He held it up and took a pic. I'm like, wow, that's radical. And of course, now everybody does it on their phones.
This is the guy. Now we know where it started.
Noel started the selfie, yes. Anyway, he took it, and right next to him, it, for the first time in quite a long time, it said try. And, of course, suddenly it's like, oh, my God, he's back. Communication's back, mm-hmm. You know. So, and then it was like a floodgate again. And then at that point, Peter would come over, and he would conduct, I don't know how to call them, but we'd invite over maybe 10, 12, 14 people, and I remember one night we were getting ready to do it. And, of course, everybody loads up on film, so we have plenty of film.
Yeah.
And Noel was working late that night. And so they started to take pictures, and it said, wait for Noel. So we did. And he got home, like, after midnight or something. And Peter talks to the house and communicates with it. And it's quite fascinating to watch him. And then him and Noel and Peter, and I mean, Wright and Noel and Peter all had a conversation amongst all of us. It was quite fascinating to watch. It was seriously like talking, ask a question, get an answer, give a response. You know what I mean? Back and forth and back and forth.
Yeah.
And Peter was unique in that respect where he could actually, like, I think the most photographs we would ever get at one time is when Peter was there. I think we got a couple dozen that time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bunch of times, but I just remember that one specifically because it was so many people here and it was so demonstrative and he had very specific things he was talking about. Oh, by the way, I should mention, though, earlier we were talking about Bill Murphy. He sought us out because he had some similar experiences when he was young. But he did that show Fact or Fake on Sci-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
We were an episode of it. At that point, there were so many people, you know, on the internet claiming they knew how we did it. And, you know, if you scratch on the back of the film, or we have like giant sheets of plexiglass that we write on and all this stuff, you know. So
yeah.
What Fact or Fake did, there's like a scientist and a photo expert and an FBI agent. So they came over the house. They were here like 5 days, I think it was. And they went over every one of the internet theories and tried to prove or disprove them.
Yeah.
And it was the greatest time of all the shows. It was so much fun because at one point I remember they had this giant sheet of plexiglass. It took four guys a half an hour to load into the house, And Mikowski goes, yeah, that's how we do it. Like, we have a Halloween party with, you know, there's 60 people in the room right now. And we're okay, everyone just freeze. You're not looking at what you're seeing. We're breaking in a giant sheet of plexiglass. And everyone stay still. We're going to take some pictures. Uh-huh. And we're going to slide this back out. It was just so funny. And
impossible.
I remember one person said there was a tiny person that lives under the house and that they have a computer down there. And that when you ask a question, the person types in the answer, and then it's projected out through lasers onto the Polaroid film when it snapped. I'm like, that is really the cool theory. But
a little troll down there. Well,
yeah,
okay.
And they were advancing the technology way beyond where it was, because when this thing started, the internet was just a baby, you know what I mean? So,
well, he was writing the book in 1996. We didn't get all sorts of, you know, full speed ahead until after 2000.
The funny thing is, Joe was here for like 6 months or longer. I actually don't remember. I thought he was here for a couple of weeks. And, like, I'm watching old videos and stuff. Hulu and Disney are doing a feature film on the house right now.
Oh,
and
okay.
In the process, we're finding old footage and bringing it up to them. And Joe is in a bunch of the videos, and he's also in a ton of photographs, and I didn't know that. I don't remember him being that involved.
So, that's the perfect sleuth, okay? He can blend into the woodwork, and nobody knows he's there.
Well, he did.
Yeah.
He also wrote things that, went, like when I read the book, I didn't know that. I don't remember that. You know, it was like really cool for me to, you know.
My guest is John Huckert, ghostwriter, the book with all these Polaroid pictures. They took over 12,000. Not everything had writing. Some of it just had the ectoplasm. Joe Augustin has had his own experiences in this house. That's what gives us, I think, a better angle as well. Ghostwriter, the Polaroid ghost, and other stories. He's been in the house maybe, 50 years now?
The house was built in 1925. Mikowski moved here in the early to mid-80s. So however long that is.
Well, that was my thought. He's been there long enough, and he's still saying, nothing really happens here.
It's so funny. He says it's sort of like driving a freeway. You kind of like have to tune out all the other cars and just sort of focus on where you're going. Oh, recently he saw this guy dressed in, like, we see actual people, and this guy dressed in red. He said it looks almost like a construction worker or something. He walked across the living room, essentially. John was asking me, are you having somebody working on the house? I said, no. He goes, who is that guy? I said, you know, what guy? If there was no guy.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if there's a person guy here, the dogs would react before they got within 70 feet of the house, because we live far away from a street.
Mm-hmm.
You can't actually see the house from the street, which is good. So something starts coming with the path and the dogs lose their minds. So there's not going to be a guy in red walking across the middle of the living room without the dogs taking notice. But I didn't see it at all, but John did. And then he's like, oh, okay. And then he just sort of tunes out. My other favorite thing that happens, it happens to all of us and still happens to this day, but it's still kind of fun and startling. This is the only time you still get startled, but you'll be like, I don't know, like, let's say you're in the kitchen or something. You think that, like, you know, one of us is here next to you and that you're talking to them and everything, and you turn around. And literally, there's no one in the house. And all this time you've been talking, and because you feel the presence. It's like somebody walks up next to you, and you're like, oh, hey, listen, I was thinking on, like, you know, we should have meatloaf for dinner or something. You know, you're just chatting, and then you turn around, and literally there's no one here. And you're like, hello, see if anybody's even home. And that just happens all the time, and it's funny to me, because the presence you're getting is not always corporal one, a physical body one, is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
So it's kind of fun. It's active all the time, constantly. And that's what I'm saying. If you ever come over the house and you're sensitive, as I tell people, it's not a performing monkey.
No.
It's just here. And certain times you'll feel it, and a lot of times you don't. You don't feel anything. But if you're sensitive to it, you would probably pick up something fairly quickly.
Like I said before, we were talking about the shadow person. It's like, okay, I don't have to travel.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you. Yeah, you've had a lot of experience with shadow people, or I take it you've seen them.
Off and on. But recently, after I agreed to do the interview, we've had two sightings. One, the dog went chasing the shadow person out the front door, and then, like I said before, we're doing this interview. My husband woke up to a shadow person, and the body. It isn't a physical human in this particular, but it's the size of a human, and then the head had more of a like a pineapple. Palm tree look, you know, so it's, but see, that's that shadow. And so you're not going to get the features. I've had them at department stores. It was Eddie Bauer I worked with here. This is a shopping center, and watched one walk through the store. It just like it had somewhere to go from point A to point B and just walked right through and like, okay, cool. They're around. I don't have an explanation for what they are. I think they're different in each scenario. You know, when I booked this, I thought, okay, now there's going to be a little bit more entertainment.
I think when, that makes sense to me that you'd start experiencing on a greater level because of, you know,
you're tuned in. And we're more tuned in. Yeah, we're more connected than we realize. And so for me, that's basically my barometer that says, okay, yeah, this is an affirmation of this is what's going on. And so there's another element that you pick up on stuff. And so sometimes when you're sensitive, you have to shut it out and say, not right now.
There's something that we always talk about here is confirmation shivers. You get confirmation shivers because all of a sudden you go, oh, shoot. And then you know that whatever it was, that you're getting the confirmation. So
yes. There's another Polaroid I'm looking at. There's an article that's on the Daily Star. And this is the Polaroid, I Am Here For You. You remember that one?
I remember the photograph. There's been a number of them asking, like, or this was very early on, but we would ask, like, well, why are you here? And one of them said something like, I am here for you. And one said, like, something like for these two or something. I can't remember. But that was when it was just John and I. And we realized that he was here to inspire us. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of photographs we've never shared that goes into greater detail about that. There's a lot of photographs that, we'll never share. They're intensely personal. I guess when you live in a house, I mean, it's actually, we used to call it 3.5 men because it was Noel and then my son is here. And now he's almost not any longer a teenager. Mm-hmm. So that was like 4 men. But the funny thing was, is we never shared with him any of the photographs. We were very careful because we didn't want to imprint upon him.
Right.
But he would see people. He'd see families. And he'd ask us about it, like, you know, why are, there's like these people saying that. I said, well, how many? He goes, there's 4 of them. And it's like a mom and a dad and 2 kids. And I said, what are they doing? He goes, they're sort of grinning at me, but not like big grins, just like sort of smiling a little bit. Uh-huh. And I said, well, you can say hi to them and stuff. I mean, I didn't see them. He would see them. The cool thing is when he was about maybe a year old, he, you know, kids babble, but when they first speak was when he was standing in the living room and he pointed into the hallway, you know, where the bathroom doors, where it opened, where Peter James says there's a vortex there. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he pointed in there and he said, ghost. His very first word was ghost. And I went, what? I mean, it took my breath away. And he pointed again, he goes, ghost. A lot of people would say, like, oh, they must have heard you say it. We never talked about it in front of him. Mm-hmm. And we seriously didn't for years. And he was 16 years old before he saw his first Polaroid. He did not know they existed. We kept them from him all the time. Yeah. So it was interesting because now he uses them. He'll go into one of the boxes and just reach in and grab one and pull it out. And then that will be his inspiration for the day.
Like a little oracle, a perfect oracle.
Yeah.
The dog showed certain awareness in regard to a body that may or may not be buried on the site. The psychic said he would stake his reputation on a body being buried. And the dog seems to affirm that.
Back in, I'm going to say maybe 2013, I don't remember the exact year, but Bill Murphy wanted to do something where some people that knew nothing about us and had never met before and skeptics and different people could come over and experience the house. So for 2 days on a Halloween weekend, he did something called the Ghost Rider Experience. He got these different people. I mean, everybody had to be vetted, for one, because you don't want just complete strangers in the house. But he found people that had intense interest, whether they believed it or not wasn't important. It was whether they were legitimate people and they weren't like, you know, crazy stalkers or anything. Anyway, they went to this place called Dearly Departed in Hollywood, which is they go around, they give tours of all the crime scenes in Hollywood lore and stuff. We gave them maybe 50 of the photographs framed, and they put them up in that office. And they'd have chairs and people come in and look at them, and Bill would give a little presentation. Then he would load them onto, there were two buses, and they brought them over the house for two nights. Everybody could bring their cameras and everything, whatever they wanted to do. They came over the house, and I gave a little presentation about our dog and some of the things that went on. And I had some video of the things that our dog had done. That was quite fun. But that was like 15 minutes. And after that, they could roam around, go outside, do whatever they wanted to. And I thought it was crazy, but Bill seemed to think it'd be a good experience. And we had the most amazing time for two nights. All these people taking pictures. We ended up, people found like film on eBay and stuff like that, like old film, and mostly nothing comes out on them. But over the two nights, we got three photographs. One said dig, one said here, and one was something we've never, ever, ever gotten, which was a shadow person.
Excellent.
And the thing that amazed me, it was amazing, because it was like a group picture. The shadow person was literally standing right next to me. And it's so weird, because I didn't hear about it for like a week, and Bill calls me and goes, John, they actually got some pictures. And because he was in charge of collecting everything, and he got hold of the pictures, and kind of about a year and a half later, I finally got to see them.
Oh, my.
I was amazed, because we've seen shadow people for years, but it's hard, you know, it's like shadows in the middle of the room of a person. They move, and they don't like move across the wall. They move across the middle of the room or wherever you happen to be.
And your pets can see them too.
Some of them. The current animals are two of the, as much as I love them, they are just not bright animals. They're two of the dumbest animals. And on occasion, one of them will like stare into the vortex, which is in front of it's in the hallway in front of the bathroom.
Uh-huh.
And they will stare or start barking at it. That's happened maybe over the years, maybe five or six times. It's extremely rare. They seem to be oblivious of almost everything. But our dog, Freddie, he was a border collie, really highly intelligent. And that dog reacted to this house in unbelievable ways and was very aware of what was here and what was going on. But where that dead body was that Peter James talked about under the house,
mm-hmm.
the dog could never walk across that space. Sometimes he'd turn backwards and he'd walk slowly in a semicircle around it. Other times he would go up to it and then he'd leap over it. But never would that dog walk where that space was, where that energy was, which is exactly the space that Peter James is.
He's affirming. Yeah, he's affirming that. He's saying, okay, guys, you know, believe it or not, but I'm not going there.
Yeah, he sensed there was an energy, and he was sensitive to it.
Yeah.
Whether it was good or bad, I don't know. But there was an area out back that he would not go. He literally would lose the ability to walk, and he'd be pulling himself from his front paws to get out of the space if he ever would go into it. It
was just,
and we have this on video, and when we show it to people, they're like, oh, my God, that's impossible. Yeah. You know, and
that's like a portal. No, that's a portal. That's like, you know, when people, David Pilates wonders what people end up, and if they go in there, well, that's what happens, you know, you don't come back out. Word of the wise, don't investigate without a friend on the other side to pull you back through.
To pull you back through, yeah. Well, you know, if you're ever in LA, you're welcome to come by the house. And clearly you're sensitive and that you would pick up, like, it's funny because we do invite people over. We don't do the psychic associations or anything anymore. I mean, we did all that back in the 90s and stuff and met a lot of fantastic people. But it's funny because some people come in, everything's normal, and all of a sudden it's like they pick it up or they sense it or they get hugged. We get hugged on a weekly basis here. It's literally like arms around you from behind, or, you know, squeezing a thigh or something, like saying it's okay, or,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's because you're taking good care of the space. That's just the way it says thank you. And that's so you get the perks of that.
Back in, when it first started, it was just sort of crazy weird because you feel something touching you and there's nobody around, or sometimes nobody even here in the house at all. But after a while, it's comforting. Like now, it's like you feel it and you look up for a second and and you just acknowledge it. It's cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That was what I liked about this, is that this is all about helping you believe in yourself. And you're getting it through a ghost, which is, I think, fantastic, because most people are spooky, woo-woo, afraid of ghosts. And that's really, I don't think that's what that's about. I think they just have misunderstood the whole point of the exercise, is to grow your mind, get out of your limitations, and stop putting things in boxes when you have no clue what the box is.
I agree. And the thing is, too, it's like I've been asked before, because I've had a lot of extraordinary things happen to me through my life. I mean, like crazy amounts of stuff. And someone asked me, it was a few years ago, but they said, how come all these things happen to you? Nothing happens to me. Why do all these things happen to you? And I said, I think just because I'm open to it. It's like I don't go out and try to create crazy stuff, but if you have an open mind and an open heart, I think you start recognizing things. A lot of times when someone recognizes something extraordinary or maybe paranormal or supernatural or maybe just ordinary, but we don't understand it yet. A lot of people, as soon as something comes up that spooks them the tiniest bit, they shut down and cut off and, you know, and they don't allow it. I, on the other hand, tend to like want to know more about it. I mean, is it scary? The beginning, there were moments that were generally terrifying. But as you understand it, they lose that edge. And then you start learning that you're not going to be hurt by things. You know what I mean? I mean, there are things that can hurt you. Don't get me wrong. There are things that can hurt you.
Yes.
But you can generally learn to recognize them pretty quickly.
I put links for this show in the description. Ghost Rider, The Polaroid Ghost. For more information and the book, drkrm.com. Seeing is believing. Thanks for listening.